from deep inside your radio.
Well, I think this is going to become a regular feature. The Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections. Just because, well, it's two reasons. A, quantity. And with an A like that, you really don't need a B. But B, quality. Corrections from the Los Angeles Dog Trainer. A chart in Saturday's sports section listed Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands among foreign countries producing Major League Baseball players. Puerto Rico is a commonwealth and the U.S. Virgin Islands is a territory. Residents of both are U.S. citizens. A review of tenor Emil Zurhan in Monday's calendar section said his voice sours into ecstatic roulades. It should have said his voice soars into ecstatic roulades. No, it shouldn't have. An article in Friday's calendar section about reaction to the publication of Jane Fonda's autobiography referred to the controversy about John F. Kerry's Vietnam service during the 2000 presidential campaign. Kerry was a candidate in 2004. But it's not just the, well, yeah, there's a calendar section again. The Will Call column in Thursday's calendar weekend listed the Dave Matthews shows at the Home Depot Center as being July 27th, 28th. In fact, the shows are on August 27th, 28th. The column also said that Green Day would perform at the same center on July 9th. In fact, the band show is on October 9th. But it's not just the calendar section. A headline on an article in Wednesday's Section A about the willingness of Argentina's president to play hardball with international bankers and corporate executives referred to him by his first name, Nestor. It should have used his last name, Kirchner. An article in Wednesday's food section on Crave, a cookbook by Ludo Lefebvre, identified Steve Weda as a... that's not a big one. A graphic accompanying an article in Thursday's Section A about Catholicism in the Philippines said Mexico had 126 million Catholics. Estimates vary, but most sources put the number of Catholics in Mexico at about 90 million. An article about Baby Blue's barbecue in the food section on April 6th that a flag of North Carolina was painted on its front window. It is a flag of Tennessee. And finally, in the Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections for this week, an obituary of vaccine developer Maurice R. Hilleman in Wednesday's California section incorrectly stated that measles had been eradicated. Don't panic. You're still here. Also in the world of print journalism, why don't they read us anymore, the newspaper editors ask. You know some of this story. Mitch Albom, best-selling author, radio host, and marquee newspaper columnist with the Detroit Free Press, may now be in danger of losing his job with the paper. He wrote a column that included a reference to two, not just a reference, a complete description of two now NBA players, alumni of Michigan State, attending a game during college basketball's Final Four tournament. He even described what they were wearing at the game. Albom wrote the story as if they had been there. The story was written and filed before the game took place. In the end, neither man ended up attending the game. Now he has been suspended while the paper investigates the error and looks into some of his previous columns. Also, there are indications, tragically, that in his new hit book, The Five People You Meet in Heaven, three of them are not actually in heaven. Hello, welcome to the show.
Whenever I can, take a trip on
down in the boondocks.
rise in the morning when you rise, you will be revived. Run, darling, run through the threads of the day you took to bed. It's already dead. Dream, darling, dream. Dream, darling, dream. And we can start all over again. Being friends, having fun, it's the only way to run. Run, darling, run.
Starting all over again from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. Ooh, it's so good to be back. Stumbling over them, my friends in the streets. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. It's, oh man, there should be tourists here now. This is that nice a time of year in SoCal. But ladies and gentlemen, enough marveling. There's groveling to be done. In the world of news outside the bubble, you'd think, after all this, after the Pope's buried and baseball, well, see, baseball opening in Washington sucked up a lot of oxygen this week. So there wasn't time for a lot of space for this. Dateline Washington, a top Democratic senator released formerly classified documents this week. He says they undercut top U.S. officials' pre-Iraq war claims of a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. I know, it seems like it's old news, but some people still believe that. Quote, these documents are additional compelling evidence that the intelligence community did not believe there was a cooperative relationship between Iraq and al-Qaeda, despite public comments by the highest-ranking officials in our government to the contrary. That's a quote from Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan. The declassified documents, according to the French news agency Agence France-Presse, undermine the Bush administration's claims regarding Iraq's involvement in training al-Qaeda operatives and the likelihood of that meeting between hijacker Mohammed Atta and an Iraqi intelligence officer in Prague in April 2001. That meeting, the subject of 4 million columns by William Sapphire before he left the New York Times. In disgrace? No, just but not in grace either. In October 2002, President Bush said, we've learned that Iraq has trained al-Qaeda members in bomb-making and poisons and deadly gases. But a June 2002 CIA report titled Iraq and al-Qaeda Interpreting a Murky Relationship said, quote, the level and extent of this assistance is not clear. There were many critical gaps in the knowledge of Iraq al-Qaeda links due to limited reporting and the questionable reliability of many of our sources, says the CIA report. The October 2002 National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq, the one that Congress relied on when they voted for the war, said much of the information on Iraqi training and support for al-Qaeda was, quote, secondhand or from sources of, quote, varying reliability. And a January 2003 CIA report indicates some of the reports of training were based on hearsay, while others were simple declarative accusations of Iraq al-Qaeda complicity with no substantiating detail or other information that might help us corroborate them. Levin is the guy who requested the document's declassification a year ago. Hey, never too late. Never too late to put information out unless you decide that you might not want to. The State Department has decided to stop publishing an annual report on international terrorism. The government's top terrorism center concluded that there were more terrorist attacks last year than in any year since 1985, the first year the publication covered. So we'll stop reporting that, you see, because we're safer. We're safer. Can I get my voice any higher when I say it? We're safer. Several U.S. officials defended the abrupt decision to stop publishing an annual report on international terrorism, saying the methodology the National Counterterrorism Center used to generate statistics for the report may have been faulty, such as the inclusion of incidents that may not have been terrorism. Hey, it's only April. Why all the May? Last year, the number of incidents in 2003 was undercounted in the report, forcing a revision. But other current and former officials charged that Secretary of State Rice's office ordered the report eliminated several weeks ago because the 2004 statistic raised disturbing questions about the Bush administration's frequent claims of progress in the war against terrorism. Says a former CIA analyst and State Department terrorism expert Larry Johnson, instead of dealing with the facts and dealing with them in an intelligent fashion, they try to hide their facts from the American people. A senior State Department official speaking on condition of anonymity because of the sensitivity of the issue confirmed the publication was being eliminated, but said the allegation was being done for political reasons was categorically untrue. He said, he said situation, ladies and gentlemen. And just to reassure you further, the Defense Department is unable to track how it spent tens of millions of dollars in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere in the U.S. war on terrorism. This, according to Congress's top investigator. The department, quote, doesn't have a system to be able to determine with any degree of reliability and specificity how we spent, unquote, tens of millions of dollars in war-related emergency funds set aside by Congress, this according to the Comptroller General. He's not a controller. He's a comptroller. He heads the Government Accountability Office, the nonpartisan investigative arm of Congress. He disclosed the accounting gap. Gap. They don't know how to track the money. That's a gap. So Enron was just a gap. This is Reuters language, however, not his. As part of a broader indictment of Pentagon business practices. This is the $25 billion in extra defense spending for fiscal 2005. There was no doubt that the appropriated funds were spent, although we know that a lot of the reconstruction funds for Iraq still haven't been spent yet. That's not going to tick off the Iraqis, is it? Walker said trying to figure out what the funds were spent on is like pulling teeth. The Defense Department has no immediate comment. Walker said the Defense Department is wasting billions of dollars a year because of inefficient management of its business operations. You know what would help if we put a businessman in the White House? Oh, sorry. Ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of which, an interim investigation into the hiring of Armstrong Williams, black commentator and columnist, to flack for the No Child Left Behind program. Says senior education officials showed poor judgment, but did nothing illegal or unethical when they hired him. This is a report from the Inspector General of the Education Department. Much of the report's criticism focused on whether the department got its money's worth. It noted that the agency paid for advertisements that were never made. No. Or that were sometimes of poor quality. You don't want to be spending taxpayer money on those poor quality ads. We want the best ads. We want world-class ads. Investigators did not turn up any evidence that the administration paid Williams to personally promote its policies in his columns and television appearances, but they did not look into whether the government produced covert propaganda, leaving that issue to the Congressional Government Accountability Office, which is also investigating. Apropos of the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, you figure it out, Department. In September 2003, George W. Bush told Fox News anchor Britt Hume that he doesn't read newspapers, he, Bush, preferring to, quote, glance at the headlines, just to kind of get kind of a flavor. saying he rarely reads the stories. He complained that a lot of times there's opinions mixed in with news. Bush added, the best way to get the news is from objective sources, and the most objective sources I have are people on my staff who tell me what's happening in the world. They probably read the news themselves, he said. Okay. That's 2003. This week, President Bush said he was surprised by his administration plans to require U.S. citizens to show a passport when re-entering from Mexico, Canada, and the Caribbean, ordering an administration review of whether the entry rules should be relaxed. The White House originally signed off on the change, but, quote, quoting the president, when I first read that in the newspaper about the need to have passports, particularly the day crossings that take place, about a million, for instance, in the state of Texas, I said, what's going on here, unquote. He was speaking to the convention of the American Society of Newspaper Editors, so perhaps he thought he should say he read it in the newspaper. Or maybe he does read newspapers and lied to Britt Hume. Or maybe when he ran for re-election, he thought this is a good time to read news mixed with opinion. Or maybe something else. Here is the here's the unintentional wordplay of the week from former House Speaker Newt Gingrich being asked to comment on the current tribulations of current House Majority Leader Tom DeLay.
I don't want to prejudge him, and my hope is that Tom will be able to prove his case. But I think the burden is on him to prove it at this stage.
And do you think he's doing that?
I don't know yet. I think that the jury's out, and I think that he is going to have, my only advice through friends has been that they have got to get everything out in the open, and they've got to understand that this is not something where fighting a delaying tactic does anything except hurt his case.
Newt's advice to Tom DeLay. No delaying tactic. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it'd be my pleasure to bring you the Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
We're so sorry.
Apropos, you see, it all ties in. It's all one big segue. House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, increasingly under fire for what critics describe as ethical lapses and political overreach, offered a rare apology this week for what he said were inartful remarks criticizing federal judges. His earlier comments during the Terry Schiavo case, in which he suggested the judges should answer for their behavior, set off a firestorm of criticism. He conceded that his rhetoric had been overheated after the death of Schiavo, the brain-damaged Florida woman. Quote, sometimes I get a little more passionate, and particularly during the moment and the day that Terry Schiavo was starved to death. Emotions were flowing, DeLay said. Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder what rhetoric flowed the emotions. Quote, I probably said, I said something in an inartful way, and I shouldn't have said it that way, and I apologize for saying it that way. He has continued to criticize federal judges, saying that recent court decisions are not examples of a mature society, but of a judiciary run amok. He also said in an interview with the Washington Times, this is not an apology, so we might pause the apology music for a moment. I blame Congress over the last 50 to 100 years for not standing up and taking its responsibility given to it by the Constitution. The reason the judiciary has been able to impose a separation of church and state that's nowhere in the Constitution is that Congress didn't stop them. The reason we had judicial review is because Congress didn't stop them. The reason we had a right to privacy is because Congress didn't stop them. Tom DeLay, ladies and gentlemen. But now, back to the apologies of the week. A conference of Palestinian and Israeli mayors met in Jericho this week to agree to a civilian hudna, or one-year ceasefire, and said Sderot Mayor Eli Moyal, I would like to convey my apologies for all people who were hurt in this terrible cycle of bloodshed to a group of 16 Israeli and 20 Palestinian mayors. On behalf of millions of Israelis, he continued, I would like to convey my deep regret and sadness over what has happened to the Palestinian people. Dateline, San Francisco Bay Area, two lifeguards who taped an explosive to Lucky the Rabbit before tossing her into a lake apologized this week before a judge sentenced them to jail and 30 days of community service. Nick Sigmund, 19, and his friend Paul Collins, 21, pleaded no contest to misdemeanor charges of animal cruelty charges for taping an M1000 into Castro Valley's Lake Donk, into the thing. They apologized. This from the Inland Valley Daily Bulletin in California. A story we published online March 24th and in print March 25th contained a quote stating that past anabolic use by retired sports star Bo Jackson caused the loss of his hip. Jackson stated publicly he has never used steroids. We retract the quote and the further statement that the speaker personally witnessed this damage to his life. We apologize to Mr. Jackson without reservations. I guess they're going to be waiting for their table then. Australian Health Minister Tony Abbott said this week he was sorry and embarrassed about breaking his word and slashing help for families with big medical bills. This following his rock-solid, ironclad commitment to keep the plan intact during the recent election campaign. The Florida Senate, breaking from its long-standing tradition of respect and collegiality among its members, voted unanimously to publicly recommend State Senator Mandy Dawson, saying she violated state law by asking lobbyists to pay for a trip to South Africa. Dawson, a Fort Lauderdale Democrat, was also removed from the Senate Ethics Committee. The reprimand is one in a long string of troubles for the veteran politician. Thursday's proceeding took about 5 minutes, Dawson looking down while the charges against her were read. She then got up and gave a rambling speech, according to the Tallahassee Democrat, where she talked about a dog she once adopted and how she ran for office to help babies born to cocaine-addicted moms and to deal with AIDS. Dawson qualified her one mea culpa with an if. I hope you will accept my humble and sincere apology if my actions have in any way compromised the integrity of this body. She said, please know I hold sacred and respect the integrity of the Senate and its rules. Another if apology comes from Rush Limbaugh this week. In a fit of, quote, unbridled passion, unquote, he used his self-described, quote, pouty lips, unquote, to utter the words, quote, blowjobs, unquote, on his April 12th show. The incident occurred during a diatribe about former Vice President Al Gore's new cable TV network. Limbaugh was responding to a statement by Gore that his new venture would reflect the point of view of young people. What the hell is that, Al? Limbaugh asked. What the hell is the point of view of young people? Blowjobs, that's what they're doing out there. They're out there getting oral sex all day long. That's what they're talking about. Limbaugh went on to blame former President Bill Clinton for making oral sex the number one sport in high school today. He also referred to Gore's venture as a BJ network and the oral sex channel. He was on a roll. Later in his show, Limbaugh apologized, sort of. I'm going to apologize not for saying what I said, but I am going to apologize if it offended anybody. I never apologize for what I say, but if some of you were offended by a graphic term involving actions committed by Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky that have now spread to America's high schools, I apologize. I meant to say oral sex throughout, but the guttural term escaped my pouty lips in a moment of pure unbridled passion. The staff was so stunned and so scared today they didn't dare hit the delete button, and so it got out there. My reaction is somebody go ahead and turn me into the FCC. I'll be honored to be fined. It's just another government agency with its hand in my back pocket, so go right ahead. Unquote, Rush Limbaugh. Thank you. Thank you very much. A Nova Scotia politician apologized Thursday for suggesting native bands in the province were prostituting themselves over revenues from video lottery terminals. Gary Hines, a backbencher in the Conservative government, said he was sorry about my choice of words. I did not intend to offend anyone by calling Indian Native Americans prostitutes. The British Home Office has been forced to apologize to 10 men placed under controversial anti-terrorist control orders after it linked them to the Ricin plot in London. This was something that was used to scare us a couple years ago. In an embarrassing letter to the men, the government claims that it made a, quote, clerical error, unquote, when it said the grounds for emergency restriction imposed on each of the alleged international terrorists was that they belong to and have provided support for a network of North African extremists directly involved in terrorist planning in the UK, including the use of toxic chemicals. A Home Office spokesman said basically there was a clerical error in the initial order in that the same basis for issue was given to all of the orders. It did not affect the validity of the order. The clerical error did not affect the validity of the order in any way. Still, they apologized. What are you going to do? They're under house arrest. But they got an apology from the Home Office. You can eat those. Dateline Grand Forks, North Dakota, the state's poet laureate has been placed on leave with pay at the University of North Dakota. Larry Woolwood said the university asked him to take a break from his duties as a visiting professor of English to get help with an alcohol problem. I have a history of unpredictable responses to alcohol, so my practice has been not to drink, but during the writers' conference recently, I did, and on occasion was seen as not in full control. Students in my classes will be most affected, I believe, and I apologize and ask their forgiveness for this interruption in our community of learning. It's a community, ladies and gentlemen, of learning, you see. But finally, in this parade of apologies, actually, those were the apologies. This isn't an apology. I'm just looking at it, trying to see if this is part of the seamless. No, this is not really. Those are the apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. That would be it. It is, as we say it with me now, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. It gets seamy in a moment here on the show, as opposed to seamless.
He was a man on duty, and as he started to me, there was a wink in his eye. Oh, I don't want to knock it, but with money in my pocket, I was ready just to buy. And with a swag of his shoulder, he started to get bolder. He was Spanish fly to me. Well, I'm not cruel as a rule, but I called him a fool and I walked on by. There's one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping I'm just dreaming, they send me sky high. There's one every morning, one born every evening, they send me sky high. I was acting like a hedonistic art queen. When a man made of leather started acting like my lover, I was in the middle of a bad dream. And when he touched me on the arm and he told me to keep calm, I screamed in his face. Well, I'm a bitch when there's an itch, and with a stitch in my stomach, I ran from that place. There's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm dreaming, they send me sky high. There's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. Gets me sky high. I don't fondle or fold me, couch me or cudgel me. Don't cross that line, 'cause I'm buying and I'm telling, and as long as you're selling, we'll do fine. And there's a one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep a hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm dreaming, they send me sky high. There's one every morning, two born every evening, they send me sky high. I keep a hoping I'm mistaken, hoping that I'm just dreaming.
sky. They send me. They send me skies. And they send me. They send me skies. Lord, they send me. They send me.
This is Le Show, and you might wonder why Bernie Kerik, former New York City Police Commissioner, almost Secretary of Homeland Security, why he would want to go public at this particular moment in time. But he did. He went on 2020 this week, gave an interview to Mario Cuomo's son, who's a newsman. He went on to insist that despite all the reports, mainly in the New York Daily News, since he pulled out, withdrew his name from nomination for Homeland Security chief, that it was only the nanny. Just the fact that he discovered he had hadn't paid all the taxes for his family's nanny, and she was an illegal alien. That's the only reason that he pulled out. The reason this was, I was almost going to get into this during the Apologies of the Week segment is because when he pulled his name from nomination, one of the stories that later surfaced was they had been having a torrid affair using an apartment that had been set aside for rest and recreation for first responders at 9/11 as his love shack with famed New York publisher Judith Regan. He told Cuomo he has weathered the storm that followed the news of that affair. And he says, regarding allegations that home repairs at his house in New Jersey were paid for by mobsters, quote, I am as connected to organized crime as I am to Saddam Hussein or bin Laden, unquote. We should look into that then. Maybe he's probably more connected to Saddam Hussein than bin Laden. After the withdrawal of his name, he says, Kerik says, he felt like he needed to apologize to Giuliani. See, that's where, but he didn't actually. He just said he felt like he needed to. He describes Giuliani as sort of like a father to me in one sense. He's like a brother in another. Sounds like Neverland territory to me. Meanwhile, as they say, New York Daily News columnist Lloyd Grove says Judith Regan, the publisher involved in the torrid affair with Bernie Kerik, she is moving to Los Angeles. She has been pitching her idea for a movie about a glamorous media figure who has a passionate affair with a police chief gone wrong. The descriptions of the sex scenes were reportedly NC-17. And the one person who heard the pitch said it was definitely drawn from her experience with Bernard Kerik. There's been a lot of publicity in the newspapers about it, but Judith said she wanted finally to take ownership of her own story. She called it, quote, Thug, a Love Story.
When New York needed correcting, Kerik was there. With a countenance just as grim as a cleric's stare. When his house, it needed fixing, there was no money, he was Nixon. When the mobsters would mix in, Kerik was there.
Kerik was there.
When the city was on fire, Kerik was there.
taking time out only for a torrid affair, just to make a good impression. He used a flat meant for decompression of the guys in his profession. Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there.
Carrick was there when Mayor Rudy had his passion. Carrick was there when the time had come to cash in. When Iraq needed policing, Carrick was there. Though some said it was a fleecing, could Carrick care? It was 3 long months of training, then the crap, it started raining. So without complaining, Carrick was out of there. When Homeland needed securing, Carrick was there. But his nanny records were found in disrepair. So Bernie took a powder before the questioning got louder. On the pages of the tabloids, Carrick was there, was there. When Bush did his re-swearing, Carrick was there. Tickets to the balls, he had more than his share. Things about him just smell big. Is he rogue or is he zealot? Everywhere except in Rudy's hair, Carrick is there.
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 I can be happy, I can be sad, I can be good or I can be bad. It all depends on you. I can be lonely out in a crowd, I can be humble or I can be proud. It all depends on you. I can save money or spend it, go right on living or end it. You're to blame, honey, for what I do. I know that I can be beggar or I can be king, I can be almost any old thing. It all depends on you. A gang of money, even spend it, go right on living or maybe end it. You're to blame, baby, for what I do. I know that I can be beggar or I can be king, I can be almost any old thing. It all depends.
Ladies and gentlemen, you probably are aware that Mary Cheney, the vice president's daughter, has inked a pact to write a book, her political memoirs. 35-year-old who worked on her dad's campaign, and I think the first campaign as well, will be writing this book. The deal was made with Mary Madeline, who is head of a new conservative imprint at Simon & Schuster called Threshold. Mary Madeline was formerly Vice President Cheney's spokesperson. It's neat. It's tidy. Also this week, John Bolton, President Bush's nominee for UN ambassador, had a more tumultuous than expected reception at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee when the head of the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research, Carl Ford, that was the only intelligence agency in the United States government that said, well, that got it right on the pre-war intelligence matter. We previewed this last week, said that John Bolton was a serial abuser of personnel under him. The quintessential kiss up, kick down type, he said. Bolton, an ideological ally of Vice President Cheney. Yes, it sounds like another episode of Dick Cheney Confidential coming up next here on Le Show.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, Confidential.
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 Springtime is a lovely distraction from the somewhat less colorful realities of life. Life in cherry blossoms all in bloom, unless you remember that they're there as a gift from a then soon-to-be-defeated future enemy. In the Creator's plan, flowers are pretty. Roots rarely are. The windows of the secure, undisclosed location may not give you a good view of anything above ground, but they're a great window, if you will, on the world where the real battles are waged. No wonder they once did a whole mini-series about roots. Early spring's always a difficult time for Lynn. Even after 3 years of it, I'm sure no wife could completely adjust to having her home spring cleaning organized by Navy Seabees, especially since the cleaning method they're most experienced at is hosing down. I used the opportunity to schedule some town hall meetings on Social Security. I'd been supposed to be doing them since mid-January, but the National Committee was having trouble recruiting enough security goons to make the parties a complete success. So during a pause in the action, I paid a dispiriting little visit to New York City. A certain former aide of mine was flexing her muscles, and my little girl Mary was absorbing some body blows. Not that Mary doesn't mind a little bit of that now and then, but a father has his responsibilities no matter what. So I was in Mary Madeline's New York office for some proactively reflexive muscle flexing. 2:15 p.m.
Mr. Vice President, James will be so livid he missed you. Mm. He just went to take his final crossfire.
Is that the one where he announces he's been a closet Republican all along?
I wish. Mm. More likely it's the one where he vents his envy that I have a successful conservative publishing house and he's on a failing TV show.
Well, your publishing house just started, Mary. A little early to declare it a success.
Oh, Mr. Vice President, please. We've made the deal for the McLaughlin Group Diaries. Mm. We've put in a preemptive bid, and I'm looking out for you even more by Bill O'Reilly, and I'm having lunch tomorrow with Ann Coulter about her new book. It's not lunch, really. She doesn't need lunch. We're meeting at her gym, so...
Gee, Mary, you certainly have missed being on television. Now, look, I understand you weren't all that enthusiastic about my daughter Mary's book.
Sir, Mary's a great girl. I loved working with her. She's very smart. She's got talent up the wazoo. Yazoo. I just don't think she's ready to carry a major, full, actual, complete book. Mm. I mean, you know, the political memoir of a 35-year-old. Even with illustrations and everything. Pretty thin book.
All due respect, Miss Madeline, Mary Cheney was being present at the creation of some of the most historic decisions of this administration at a time when you were off with your husband taping Alka-Seltzer commercials.
We actually shot those on film.
This woman has an important story to tell, and I'd feel that way even if she wasn't my daughter.
Well, if she hadn't been your daughter, she wouldn't have been present at those creations, and she wouldn't even have that story to tell.
Look, sweetie, I didn't come here to play meet the press with you. You know me well enough not to try to play this little game.
I'm responsible to stockholders.
So was I. Didn't stop me.
From what?
Didn't stop me from anything, as far as I can recall. Now, I'm not saying that my willingness to consider your bid for my memoirs post-administration will in any way be colored by the decision you make relating to my daughter's book. But I'm not saying that either.
Mr. Vice President, I could offer her a book deal tomorrow. Today, in fact. But it would be such a pathetically, shall we say, ungenerous arrangement that once word leaked out, it would be embarrassing to both parties, especially Mary.
I think Mary's past the embarrassment stage of life, but you know what could solve that little problem? Giving her a much bigger deal.
Yes, but nobody even heard of her until Senator Kerry brought up her name in the debate.
I guess Mary's going to owe the senator one fine dinner when she gets her first check.
Sir, maybe just a few months to get my sea legs here. Then,
you know, given the interest that Randabouse has shown in a little book of photographs of all your different hairdos, you know, like the Hillary hairdos book, might not be a bad idea to make Mary's book the first deal you announce, too.
But that would make me look like a...
Like someone who lost her public perception of integrity about the time of the third Alka-Seltzer commercial? Mary?
Yes, sir.
Good luck. It's a rough business. The trouble with some loyalists is that they expect good treatment. That's why I like Mary. She knows better. She's good people. Not sure I could say the same for John Bolton. No, don't get me wrong, he gave the State Department the closest thing it's had to a backbone since Kissinger left. But some aspects of his management style were making his confirmation hearings turn almost as problematical as a Lebanese election. So while the CBs were trying to dry the wall-to-wall carpet, I paid a little mid-hearing visit to Mr. B. Friday, 10:22 a.m.
Mr. Vice President, welcome to the humble apartment of a serial abuser. Can I get you something? Personally, I'm drinking the blood of some subordinates.
John, I'm not surprised your temper is more famous than your sense of humor. Look, my friend, look around you. The Wolfowitz nomination is sailing through. The Negroponte nomination is sailing through. Both those guys got people killed. You barely got people fired. Why am I having to pay attention to this when they're playing baseball in this town?
Well, first of all, Mr. Vice President, from what I know, you're not a baseball fan, so...
That's beside the point. You can be in the presidential box and not be looking at the field, you know.
Look, sir, in a way, those nominations are sailing through because of me. I've been the lightning rod, the whipping boy, the guy who gets bad reviews for his hair. Thank you, Washington Post style section, very much. So,
you know, John, if my constituent in chief only wanted a team that batted less than 500, he never would have sold the Rangers.
What are you talking about? He made a fortune on that deal.
All right, I'm not here to talk about people's deals. That's not what the people of the United States pay their vice president to do. I'm here to talk about how to turn you from lightning rod to weather stripping.
Mr. Vice President, I speak my mind and yours. The reason people are gunning for me is that when it comes to intelligence people trying to mislead policymakers with alleged facts, I'm the foot that puts your rubber to the road. You know this. You told me this at the first Heritage Foundation retreat I ever attended.
I told you one other thing, pal. Yeah. Actually, I didn't tell you. I assumed you were smart enough to figure it out. But I guess I was wrong. Actually, I'm sure I was.
Well, what was the other thing? I'm month to month here.
If you're working the back of the boat, you can spill as much blood as you like. Up here, near the bridge, we consider that kind of a hygiene problem. It's fine to put the knife into people, John. That's part of the job description. But only civilian leaves fingerprints.
Well, sir, I'd hate at this late date to give any member of any congressional committee the idea that whatever I was doing was part of a mandate that came to me straight from the vice president's office. But
what? Now, I just couldn't wait to hear how that pathetic little attempt at a threat was going to play out. Mr. Bolton, you're too valuable for us to throw you overboard like a Harry or Bernie Carrick. I'd just like you to...
take this list. These are the people who have been making those stupid charges about me trying to intimidate them or get them fired. And I'd just like you to sit down at your computer, compose a nice heartfelt letter of apology, and zap it BCC to each of these nice folks before the committee reconvenes on Tuesday. You know how to do that, don't you?
An apology? Mr. Vice President, you've got to be kidding.
Unfortunately, Mr. Bolton, my sense of humor is worse than yours. As I told that gala dinner last week, I don't do funny. Oh, and do me a favor.
You want me to get a haircut too?
Zap me a copy of the apology letter. I want it for my scrapbook and my memoirs. Strange to think about it this way, but you spend a whole campaign cycle being proactively aggressive towards your enemies, so you can get back in power and do the same thing to your friends. End of partial diary for mid-April 2005. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 Ladies and gentlemen, just a little bit of additional news from outside the bubble. The Bush administration has been accused of ignoring its own arms embargo, overseeing the sale of $7 million worth of weapons to the new Haitian government to equip its police force, a police force that human rights groups say carries out routine executions of dissidents and whose weapons are often illegally funneled to armed militia. Good, nice people doing nice things. That, ladies and gentlemen, concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR News NPR... What's it called? I forget. On the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network. I forget what everything's called today. Up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave. around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Channel 108 on Sirius Satellite Radio, new home of Bill Bradley. He's good radio. And available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow. Oh, and it's NPR worldwide throughout Europe. I finally remembered. I thought if I sat here long enough, it would come to me. And it would be just like Bernie Kerik staying public if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists always available at harryshearer.com. Till next week from New Orleans, Louisiana, have a good week. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates from KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.